This is Kathy Damaris, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, reading from the July 2026 issue of Arizona Highways. This issue celebrates the U.S. semi-quincentennial by highlighting 250 local things to love about the state, including artisans, eateries, historic landmarks, and wildlife spots. It serves as a travel guide showcasing Arizona's diverse landscapes, scenic photography, destinations, and cultural history to inspire exploration. Today, I'm going to continue reading from the article entitled 250 Things We Love About Arizona. Finishing up the section entitled Learn, we find Virginia G. Piper Center for Creative Writing, located in the home built in 1907 for Arizona State University's president. The center is focused on literary exploration. It's a place where everyone from aspiring writers to best-selling authors can gather for talks, readings, classes, workshops, and other literary events. In addition, students and members of the community are welcome to use the house as a writing or reading space. The Virginia G. Piper Center for Creative Writing is located at 450 East Tyler Mall in Tempe, phone number 480-727-7848, website piper.asu.edu. Walpi. Perched on the high, narrow finger of First Mesa, this ancient Hopi village is the mother of the 11 present-day Hopi settlements. The Hopis have occupied this defensive location, built from hand-plastered sandstone, since the 17th century. Its residents still live as their ancestors have for centuries, without electricity or running water. The Hopi tribe at Walpi is located on State Route 254. Phone number 928-737-2670, website experiencehopi.com/Walpi-village. The next section in the 250 Things We Love About Arizona is People We Love. Among the things we love most about Arizona are the people. Around the state, ordinary people are doing extraordinary things. Here are just 10 of them. People doing interesting and innovative work that's making a difference in their communities. Without exception, they resist taking credit, insisting that their accomplishments result from the work of many hands. And while that's true, it's also true that these 10 people have the kind of vision that makes others want to get behind their plans and ideas. They are leaders who inspire us to make Arizona a better place. First up, Sean Bomar, FireWise. During the 2013 Yarnell Hill Fire, Sean Bomar watched an incident management team take over the elementary school in Peoples Valley. The effort was efficient and organized, and when the team left, not one Gatorade bottle remained. Bomar was impressed. At the time, he was serving on the community's fire board, and what he saw during the fire convinced him the community was unprepared. He quit the board, earned a degree in fire science, and got field experience with a neighboring department. And although he resisted appeals to assume management of the Peoples Valley Fire District, he finally agreed in 2019. Bomar brought in paid staff, fixed up the department's sleeping quarters, and staffed the station 24/7, cutting response time in half. He added equipment, created a wildland division, and applied for grants funding fuels reduction in strategic areas. He also got a grant to fund coordinators in surrounding communities that later earned FireWise USA certifications from the National Fire Protection Association. Back in 2013, Bomar also saw the need for a multi-agency facility. As chief, he got land donated and negotiated with government agencies and private companies to build the facility. At press time, the project was awaiting the final vote. Bomar still has a drawing he made of the facility years ago. We'll probably hang it on the wall somewhere, he says. Aaron Carr Jordan, solving the big problems. Aaron Carr Jordan believes complex problems such as poverty and unemployment are solvable when you bring together the right people who are genuinely interested in working together. An educational psychologist specializing in learning, Carr Jordan has made a career of helping at-risk people get access to something that helps them live the lives they want. Most recently, that something has been technology. We have massive technological shifts happening every single day, Carr Jordan says. For folks who don't know how or don't have access, I can't see a way for them to catch up. That's how she landed on the Institute for Digital Inclusion Acceleration, or IDIA, which removes barriers by taking technology to people with the greatest need, then teaching them and making it fun. IDIA does that through 10 technology hives around the state, staffed by digital navigators who help people accomplish whatever they're interested in, whether that's virtual reality, 3D printing, or setting up an email account. Two hives are mobile, allowing IDIA to extend its reach into communities such as Tombstone, where it anchored a school's first ever STEM event. In the past 2 years, IDIA has served 136,000 Arizonans, including helping some 300 unemployed or underemployed people find good jobs with benefits. If you can see a better future, Carr Jordan says, anything is possible. Ty Fitzmorris, Creative Community. When Ty Fitzmorris opened the Raven Cafe on North Cortez Street in downtown Prescott, he pictured an adjacent bookstore. Ultimately, though, he opened the bookstore on the next block, much of which was chronically unoccupied. Fitzmorris had been talking with the U.S. Postal Service about buying the federal building across from the Yavapai County Courthouse when the COVID-19 pandemic hit. When other prospective buyers left the table, he closed the deal. Shortly afterward, several buildings on Cortez came up for sale, and Fitzmorris used rents from the federal building to buy them. He partnered with Newt Lynn, who has a degree in historic preservation, to restore the old buildings, peeling away stucco, drop ceilings, and fluorescent lights. Addressing what he saw as a lack of businesses oriented towards kids and young parents, Fitzmorris began offering space to young entrepreneurs at affordable rents. The rebranded NoCo District is now home to a music store, a toy store, arts collective, a community kitchen, a social club, and two theater companies. In the next phase, Fitzmorris plans to add green space, beginning with a pocket park next to the Raven. There's a monumental amount of work left to do, he says. What makes it exciting is how the community steps in and gets involved. Manny Guzman, Rebuilding Superior. Despite deep roots in Superior, if 7 generations on his dad's side, 5 on his mom's, Manny Guzman's family relocated to Oklahoma when the Magma Copper Company closed local mining operations in the 1980s. They returned a few years later to a town in decline. After high school, Guzman left home to attend the University of Arizona and settled there, though he remained involved in the community. This is home, he says. Then, in 2018, Superior's mayor asked him to join the board of the recently organized Rebuild Superior. The town's biggest issue was capital, and the new nonprofit would allow the community to apply for grants. Guzman returned home to serve as the organization's first executive director. A religious studies major, he didn't have economic development expertise, but community and economic development is largely about relationship building, he says, and I know how to do that. Early on, the organization painted buildings and murals. It took over the struggling food bank that Guzman's grandmother had helped establish, and it opened the Superior Enterprise Center, which offers skills training and business support. The center's welding program has been very successful, and so has a marketing partnership with the local Chamber of Commerce and nearby Boyce Thompson Arboretum. Today, the food bank is winning awards and the community is growing for the first time in 40 years, Guzman says. We're in a different era, he says, and it's an exciting one. J.D. Hill, bringing food from table to farm. J.D. Hill wanted to be a small farmer but was advised against it. So when he heard about a business model popping up around the country, he was intrigued. The idea was to give customers a 5-gallon bucket for their food waste and collect it regularly. Hill's take on that idea was to sell customers vegetables that had been grown with the help of their composted food. Who wouldn't want to buy those? He began collecting buckets around dumpsters and signing up customers at farmers market. Making pickups in a truck with no air conditioning and a sticking door, he washed buckets on site because he didn't have enough of them to swap out and fermented waste in his backyard. Today, the business Recycled City has grown to serve 6,500 residential and 200 business clients. On farmland he and a partner recently bought in Florence, Hill supports a small independent farmer by supplying the infrastructure and buying the produce. With a vegetable subscription, Recycled City collects food scraps scraps for free or customers pay a modest fee. 40% of what we grow isn't eaten and 95% of it goes to the landfill or incinerator, he says. Why don't we do this? Brad Lancaster, Planting the Rain. A permaculture class got Brad Lancaster thinking about water harvesting. He saw how these practices restored dying rivers and recharged aquifers in other countries, and he recalls asking, why aren't we doing this? His local solution seemed counterintuitive, plant more trees. But neighbors in Lancaster's central Tucson neighborhood worried about watering them. We'll plant the rain before we plant any tree, he told them, and instead of replanting exotic species that had failed, they'd copy the plant palette of the desert. Residents initially planted 200 trees in rainwater capture basins, and they cut curbs, which was illegal at the time, to collect storm runoff, which also controlled flooding. This year, the neighborhood completed its 30th annual planting, which has evolved to include understory plants. That effort has dramatically lowered temperatures. Native birds and wildlife have returned, and neighbors now know one another. Lancaster's Little Gorilla pilot project inspired change citywide. Curb cutting is now legal in Tucson and mandated in new road construction, Lancaster says. Tree suppliers now offer native trees, and the idea has spread to a neighboring community. All you need to start is two people, one shovel, and one tree, Lancaster says. As people see that and get excited, it can grow. Wendy Lewis, Going the Distance. Running is an important part of Hopi culture in Wendy Lewis's life. Several years ago, the three-time Hopi High School state champion started the running apparel brand Hohungvit, or Strong Ones. The idea was to give Hopi runners something symbolic of their culture that they could wear when competing and that other Hopis could recognize and get excited about. I ultimately created that brand to raise money to help runners get to where they needed to be, Lewis says. The company always brought in just enough money to help me help people. More recently, Lewis founded the Hopi Distance Project, a community development nonprofit with a focus on public health. Through partnerships with companies such as ASICS, the organization has provided high-quality running shoes to students at five tribal schools. It also hosts a women's running retreat focused on Hopi culture and is a sponsor of the Marathon Project, which gives runners the chance to meet elite athletes. If things don't work out competitively, Lewis says, there's still so many ways we can be connected to running. Her ultimate dream, though, is to help a native runner get to the Summer Olympics. That's the goal, she says. Jeanette Mayer, Spreading Kindness. Everything changed for Jeanette Mayer after her son Ben died, and in her grief, she understood kindness differently. People showed up for my family in so many ways, she recalls. I was saved by that kindness. Her family has opened a paint-it-yourself pottery studio in Tucson, and Mayer found comfort in working with clay. At the same time, an artist in Oregon was leaving blown glass objects in public places for people to find. And she and a group of friends created 400 ceramic wind chimes and distributed them around Tucson, along with a reminder to be kind, on the anniversary of Ben's death. Mayer found the experience cathartic, and Ben's Bells was born. The organization opened studios and kindness camps, created Be Kind stickers and community murals, and offered kindness programs for schools and workplaces. After 17 years at Ben's Bells, Mayer left the organization to earn a doctorate. She's now an assistant research professor at the University of Arizona, where she studies kindness and how to create the conditions for it. We've got to keep talking about this, she says, because when we don't, we believe all the things we're hearing about how we all hate each other, which is not the case at all. Roberto Nutlewis, Tapping into Ancient Wisdom. Roberto Nutlewis began community organizing around climate justice as an Indigenous studies student at Northern Arizona University. And when Navajo leaders asked, what's the solution, he found a potential answer in agroecology. The definition that I've landed with is a food system that is synchronized with the local ecological processes, he says, and that's what my people historically had. Nutlewis established his own farm at age 16 on an alluvial fan where water flows from the hills, depositing sediment, creating fertile soil. In college, he interviewed farmers from all over the Navajo Nation and began experimenting with their methods, using drought-tolerant heirloom seeds and creating permeable brush dams and berms to capture seasonal runoff and reduce erosion. As executive director of Nahi Kia, Nutt Lewis works to educate tribal leaders and communities in the Black Mesa region about these ancient techniques. He does so by bringing in speakers, hosting workshops on traditional food making, and distributing food. A holistic approach, he believes, is one way to address issues of food insecurity and culture loss. The knowledge and wisdom of our people is ancient and time-tested, he says. If we're going to live and thrive in our homelands, we really need to look to ancestral wisdom. Olivia Woods, Blazing Trails. Olivia Woods decided she wanted to work outdoors after a rafting trip to the Grand Canyon. She started volunteering with the Arizona Trail Association, and it wasn't long before she took a job with the organization, coordinating work for groups of volunteers. Taking courses on sustainable trail work eventually led to her current job building trails for Flagline Trails, which does a lot of work on the Arizona Trail. A certified sawyer, Woods travels all over the state, camping for 8 days at a time and working on trails from the North Rim to the Santa Rita Mountains. The work is important, she says, because it creates space for people to experience the outdoors safely while protecting the environment. The trail is a little sacrificial space that we disturb so that more of it is protected, she says. Wood still works for the ATA, working as a trail steward for a stretch in the Superstition Mountains. She loves the work and wants to see it promoted as a career option. Not all kids want to grow up and be a doctor or a lawyer, she says. When I was in high school, I knew nothing about any of this. The next section in the 250 Things We Love About Arizona is entitled Places to Make a Photograph. Whether you're using a Nikon Z8, a Sony Alpha 7RV, or an old iPhone 6, photography still comes down to where you're standing. There are a lot of options in Arizona. To find some of the best places, we asked some of the best shooters. Parker Canyon. The beauty of Workman Creek led me to my personal discovery of the viewpoints near Parker Canyon along State Route 288, Claire Curran says. The views are stunning and compelling. There are a number of dirt roads that lead to the edge of the cliffs with striking panoramic views of four peaks in the Mazatzal Mountains, the Superstition Mountains, Theodore Roosevelt Lake, and the bridge over the lake. I was immediately drawn to this area because I could drive right up to these incredible photo opportunities and photograph to my heart's content. I soon discovered that every season provided wonderful clouds, mild to ferocious storms, unique weather such as fog over the lake, and the most colorful sunsets, which are every photographer's dream. My favorite season is winter when a snowstorm moves in. The viewpoints can be covered in snow, and the mountains across the lake, with the four peaks prominently featured, can be blanketed in snow. There is such beautiful pre-dawn alpenglow on the peaks when they're covered in snow. To access some of these viewpoints, a high-clearance vehicle is a must. Four-wheel drive is sometimes a help. For more information, contact the Mesa Ranger District, phone number 480-610-3300, website fs.usda.gov/Tonto. Tonto Creek, Hell's Gate Wilderness. As a novice explorer, Joel Hazelton says, I used to pore over maps of Tonto Creek, hoping one day I'd be hardcore enough to tackle it. That day eventually came, but in my own slow photographer style. My favorite memories in Tonto Creek are the post-sunset treks back to camp, where I'd slowly make my way down canyon by scrambling over small waterfalls and quietly backstroking through wall-to-wall pools of water while watching the endless night sky rotate above me. For more information, contact the Payson Ranger District, phone number 928-474-7900, website fs.usda.gov/Tonto. Moran Point, Grand Canyon National Park. Moran Point is a place that calls me back on nearly every trip I make to the South Rim, Adam Shalou says. I was fortunate to photograph this scene one August morning after heavy overnight monsoonal showers had left much of the canyon view obscured by low-hanging clouds. As the sun crested the horizon, light spilled into the canyon, creating ethereal scene. The combination of filtered light and shifting cloud cover created a dynamic scene that changed quickly, offering a range of photographic opportunities in a short period of time. For more information, contact Grand Canyon National Park, phone number 928-638-7888, website nps.gov/grca. Glen Canyon National Recreation Area. Most of Glen Canyon was lost in 1963 when Lake Powell was created, Gary Ladd says. Fortunately, a 15-mile segment of the canyon survived downstream of the dam, and goodness gracious, it's a visual knockout. I have made dozens of trips through the canyon in a small inflatable raft, stopping here and there to photograph blooming redbud trees, petroglyphs, ancient river cobbles, dazzling river reflections, and of course, those incredibly fine and utterly regal Navajo sandstone cliffs. For more information, contact the Glen Canyon National Recreation Area, phone number 928-608-6200, website nps.gov/glca. Cibola National Wildlife Refuge. My choice is largely based on current conditions, Jack Dikinga says. When the weather and climate conspire to create an interesting statement about the land, or in this case, the water. Also, I value solitude, so there's something appealing about leaving Arizona and heading into California and then doubling back to a secluded location in Arizona that's isolated by the Colorado River. The giant reflection pools at Cibola emphasize the incredible stands of cottonwood trees. The sight of a cottonwood signals water, and those trees represent life and beauty. For more information, call 928-857-3253, website fws.gov/refuge/Cibola. Marshall Lake. Sometimes the pleasure of taking a photograph is about more than what I can see, Tom Bean says. At Marshall Lake, scents of mud and cattails mingle as unseen creatures call and croak from its marshy edge. In winter, the air is sharp with cold. When taking photographs, I especially love the lake at first light or late sun touches the San Francisco peaks. In summer, I shelter in my truck as storms sweep across the open sky, and I jump out with camera and tripod as magic light breaks through the clouds. For more information, contact the Flagstaff Ranger District at 928-526-0866, website fs.usda.gov/Coconino. Santa Rita Mountains. I love the western slopes of the Santa Rita Mountains in southern Arizona, Norma Jean Gargazza says. There's something to be said for a place so special it attracts the elusive jaguar to its bountiful canyon, towering peaks, and rolling grasslands. And there's something to be said for a place so special it ranges from the arid desert floor to snow-covered peaks. For more information, contact the Nogales Ranger District, phone number 520-761-6000, website fs.usda.gov/Coronado. Aravaipa Canyon. I've loved Aravaipa Canyon since I first dipped my feet in the creek during a day hike after moving to Arizona in 2002, Jeff Maltzman says. I've since returned dozens of times to hike, camp, and photograph in this stunningly beautiful desert oasis. Aravaipa Creek, one of southern Arizona's few perennial streams, and the canyon it carves through the Galeuro Mountains create a lush riparian corridor that offers a respite from the often harsh Sonoran Desert. For more information, contact the Safford Field Office at 928-348-4400, website recreation.gov/permits/251864. Saguaro National Park West. One of my favorite places to photograph is Saguaro National Park West near Tucson, Norma Jean Gargazza says. It's full of surprises. On most days, the towering saguaros seem to quiver in the waves of summer heat. Yet, on rare occasions, it can be dramatically different, as it is when these massive beings rise from the desert on a quiet, foggy winter morning. This is where the Sonoran Desert does its magic. It never ceases to amaze. For more information, contact Saguaro National Park at 520-733-5158, website nps.gov/SAGU, Tres Alamos Wilderness. This area acts as a transition zone within the Mojave Desert, home to Joshua trees, merges with the Sonoran Desert, home to saguaros, Paul Gill says. This is the only place in the world where both species, the largest succulents in the U.S., grow together in the wild. The unique overlap occurs primarily along U.S. Route 93, the Joshua Forest Parkway, between Wickenburg and Wickiup, offering a scenic 75-mile stretch where these iconic desert plants coexist. For more information, contact the Kingman Field Office at 928-718-3700, website blm.gov/Arizona. Yavapai Vista Trail. I know the West Fork of Oak Creek is popular, Derek Von Briesen says, but I never fail to recommend it because it's just so beautiful, especially in the fall. In the winter, I like Doe Mountain, which offers 360-degree views of the Verde Valley. In the spring, sunset and moonrise over the spires of Cathedral Rock are spectacular. And in the summer, I love to catch an afternoon monsoon storm developing from the Yavapai Vista Trail. For more information, contact the Red Rock Ranger District at 928-203-2900, website fs.usda.gov/Coconino. Deer Creek Canyon. Last August, while leading a photography river trip, I finally got to experience Deer Creek Canyon the way it had always dreamed it could be, Shane McDermott says. After a long, hot uphill hike in temperatures well over 100 degrees, I descended into the hidden world of sculpted sandstone. Direct sunlight was just beginning to kiss the upper canyon walls and cottonwood trees, while the narrow slot below remained in soft shade. That contrast created an almost mystical glow. For more information, contact the Backcountry Information Center at 928-638-7875, website nps.gov/GRCA. Signal Hill Saguaro National Park. Signal Hill is one of my favorite places because it blends natural beauty with a quiet sense of human presence, Gurinder Singh says. The enigmatic petroglyphs etched into the rocks hint at stories and spirits from long ago. During monsoon season, the atmosphere shifts dramatically with the weather. The skies often erupt with towering clouds, distant lightning, and sweeping curtains of rain. At sunset, the entire landscape can ignite in vivid hues of orange, pink, and purple, casting long shadows and silhouettes across the desert. For more information, contact Saguaro National Park at 520-733-5158, website nps.gov/SAGU. That concludes today's readings from Arizona Highways. This is Kathy Damaris, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.